football on off the ball.
For Arsenal, it's a sickener. I mean, there was a lot of optimism, wasn't there, around that? You know, you could see the fans getting excited. I saw some footage from the Box Park of the fans really getting on it. City, their old hands are going to Wembley.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koi Gig Pod
on Off the Ball
with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Paint March Green with Cadbury.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the Koi Gig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee with you here on what is apparently a big week for Irish football. Not sure if anyone has heard that there is something happening this week. Of course, the Koi Gig Pod, we focus mainly on the world of women's football here, but we are sending all our luck to the boys in green this week as they look to qualify for this summer's World Cup. And we have long said on the podcast that we want back-to-back World Cups for our Irish teams so that we can properly celebrate. So while we will all be tuned in to that game later on this week, there are actually some other things happening in the world of football that we are going to dive in and maybe provide a little bit of light relief from the sheer panic and doom that is slowly creeping in as the week goes on. And joining me to look at those things is Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron. Guys, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Scarlett, we'll start with yourself because you had a great weekend. Big derby win, goal from Jess Fitzgerald as well. How are the feelings after that?
Yeah, we were all delighted. A derby win's always great and it was off a tough week. Like, we had 3 games in 7 days. So we were all, the last 10 minutes were pretty tiring. And especially then when you score late on, you're just, everyone's throwing bodies on the line. So no, it was great, I think, for morale, to get a big win like that. And we've had a few injuries the last few weeks as well. So it was great. And then obviously for Jess to get her first goal as well was brilliant. It was really enjoyable and we were delighted with it, yeah.
says
That's
a
great.
lot about my algorithm now that I was getting so much like Hibs content after the game happened.
I was getting extra as well because there was a big P-Man crew went over to the match, obviously, to see Jess and Ellen Dolan playing against each other, like, because obviously still very proud of the two of them going over. So I was getting extra content, but I was loving it. It was great.
Yeah, it's nice to see that like that support is there for all the players that have gone over, and a good excuse as well for anyone who wants to go watch a decent match.
There's a good range of like people playing across. Obviously, Glasgow City, we've got a couple of girls there, and Celtic similarly, and now Hearts and Hibs too. So it's plenty of teams if people want to get behind and support.
What you're saying, Karen, is we're taking over Scottish football in the same way we did Hampden Park a couple of years ago. We're now taking over the league.
We'll do what we need to do.
Yeah, well, it was great to see, and it's always good to see a happy Scarlet Heron's face pop up on all the promotional photos that were going around on the day. So congratulations on that one. There was also some big results here, Karen, P-Mount in particular. I thought you'd be particularly happy
Oh,
about
are we going
that
to talk about that? Oh, okay, if we must.
one. Well, I think you deserve it. You had a
I
tough
think,
opening week, so.
yeah, well, to be fair, I went down to watch the game in against Bowes, and I was really, really impressed. Obviously, it's like such a new team. I think surviving players would have been Coombsy, who wasn't number one last year, so she's new in goal. She's manning a whole new back line there in front of her. You've got probably three other starters, four other starters from last year. It's still kind of there in that first opening week, and I thought they played really, really well. But yeah, the Rovers game, I don't think we expected the contest to go that way because I do think Piemont were the better team. They looked like the more assured team, and if you're looking at it on paper, Rovers, with all the signings they've made, they have kind of more experienced squad now, but it doesn't automatically mean it's going to click straight away. I think it will click eventually, but yeah, it was really interesting to see that kind of dynamic, that Piemont, less experienced team, but maybe have clicked a little bit quicker, or maybe it was just the occasion, as well. It could be a one-off, but it was really, really impressed by Piemont.
Yeah, it was an interesting week of fixtures in general. Personally, was obviously paying attention to the Sligo Rovers and Galway,
They did
and
a good start for Sligo, I'd say. Obviously, narrowly losing out to Galway, who are now kind of definitely, this is like we said it before, this is the year that they need to not be the dark horses. They need to actually be front runners for a title race. And obviously, you've got Shells who've dropped points, everyone else has dropped points. So, yeah, it's an interesting start. I know we're only two games in, but it's kind of good to see. And it's good to see the margins of the games aren't big again.
I was again, it was kind of the thing we were talking about last week where I was saying about Sligo and getting results and kind of being in the game for quite a lot and then losing points at the kind of latter half of a game or in the second half when they just seem to tire and maybe not have the same experience that some of the other teams do to pull out the win. And it felt a little bit like that watching that game at the weekend. But as you say, it is only the second game in, and with Galway hopefully going to be one of the big teams of the season, could potentially not be the worst result as things go on. You obviously also had Athlone getting a win over DLR, a narrow win, 1-0. Wexford and Shelburne drawing, Bowes comprehensive enough over Cork, and same with Treaty over Waterford. But I suppose the big story going into the weekend was that news out of Athlone with John Sullivan leaving just after one game into the new season. He had obviously came in an interim basis last season, given a 2-year contract, came out, and it had come out in a couple of reports that he was leaving, and then it was confirmed by Athlone and confirmed by himself, and he said that basically that he wanted to wish the team all the best in the world, and that, he hoped that they would be able to continue with the group of professional players that were there, and we've seen like what they managed to do last season after losing their manager, but there was just certain things going on that he couldn't quite agree with. Scarlett, it's a big one for Athlone to have to try and handle again, having only gone through it so recently.
Yeah, it seems like since Kieran Calhuff, they can't keep hold of a manager to save their lives. But I think the quality that they have in that dressing room, I think that the big thing about Athlone this year is just their depth. I think when you look at other teams in the league and you look at their benches, they're not as strong as Athlone's is at the minute. So I think whatever manager does come in there, it's not going to be, it's not a hard team to take in terms of the quality you have, but I suppose now whatever manager is looking to go in, they're probably going to second guess it maybe and say, well, why have these managers left? Or like I'm not sure what happened there, but it definitely is a weird one to for him to have left again into the season. And the same of Colin Fortune, obviously last year leaving at a weird time as well. So yeah, it's a weird one for Athlone, and I'm sure it's not great for the players either. You want a bit of consistency to start off the season, and you want to build a bit of momentum as well. But I think a few of the background coaching staff took the team at the weekend in their win. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see who comes in. There's a few experienced managers who are without a job in the Women's League of Ireland at the minute. I think you look at like Albin Heisa maybe, who might look to take that role. I think Eoghan Whirrin's recently got a new role somewhere, so maybe not him. But there's a few managers who are still jumping ships. So be interesting to see who goes in to take the reins.
Yeah, I think whoever it is, they're gonna have to. I think experience is gonna be key there because it sounds obviously we're only seeing it from the outside, but it sounds like it's more than managing a team. Like it sounds like there's outside influences that have to be managed there as well in terms of in the previous regime, I think board involvement was mentioned. This one has kind of come out of the blue, so I think it's gonna take a big character who can take that on as well as managing the team. Because like Scarlett said, that's a really attractive job managing that squad because they're stacked, you know, really, really good players and still young players who can learn and develop and go on to, I don't know, even go to a next level, we'd say maybe in Europe. But there's more to it than that. So it'll be interesting to see who sees that and says, yeah, I can be the person to manage that.
Yeah, because there is definitely a feeling at the end of last season that this wasn't a one and done team, you know, that they had achieved a lot under stresses that potentially they shouldn't have had to have deal with in that stage of their season, and still came out, had their Champions League run, had their, well, the European run, and had the run in the league as well. There's a lot there still to be built on, and it seems like in the background they've done a lot of work in Athlone as well over the last couple of years in terms of the players that they've got in. Not necessarily just looking to what's happening in other Irish teams. You know, they've brought
Yeah,
in a
their
lot of
outside
people from
recruitment has
outside.
been, yeah, their outside recruitment has really, it's made everyone else kind of look at doing the same.
Yeah.
So it's had quite a big impact on the, you know, the whole kind of ecosystem of the league in terms of Irish, young Irish girls coming through. They're having to battle a little bit harder. I think Gary in PMN said it in his interview. He's like, we're signing these young Irish girls who are now not getting into these teams, and it's benefiting Piemont in a way, but obviously it's because other teams are recruiting from outside, they're straight away getting international experience players in. It's really interesting to be fair what Athlone have done and the impact it's had kind of widespread.
Yeah, it's just if they can sort that one little issue of holding on
Just
to a
sort out the issue of
manager.
being an absolute basket case. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, speaking of young Irish players, I actually saw Tom Maher had done a piece over the last couple of days talking about our need for some sort of team that isn't just straight into the senior team, as we have talked about on this podcast on an international level for quite some time. And he'd done up a very accurate graphic as to what the FAI's graphics normally are whenever they announce a squad or a team. And Scarlett, I just saw your name on it, and I saw the graphic, and I was like, wait, have they finally been listening to us?
Nope.
Unfortunately,
Nope.
that wasn't the case, but I
Dream
would
on.
recommend
Dream on.
going to look at his team because it is actually quite interesting, and it's a good way of actually getting that conversation started in terms of who those young players are that could potentially really benefit from a team that we've maybe talked a little bit abstractly about or talked about, you know, very certain players. But he's actually done out a full squad, and it's an interesting one. And also, just if you're interested in Irish football and you don't get to watch every single team every single week, it's a good way of pinpointing a few people for the future. So would recommend going to check that out. But the other big news of last week, which kind of applies across the world, to be honest, and that was the FIFA decision to say that if you're to compete in one of their competitions, you must have at least one female head coach or assistant coach, and then two coaches on the bench. So that can include the head coach, assistant coach, and then you need one other. And they're starting that with the under 17s and under 20s Women's World Cup and Women's Champions Cup competitions this year. So very, very soon. And in light of the new, like, not necessarily in any way connecting it to what happened in Athlone with John Sullivan, but just the fact that there was managerial news on the horizon, this kind of got us talking a little bit in our group chat about, you know, what makes a good modern manager in the women's game? Because, you know, it's something we've talked about quite a lot. I think the idea from FIFA in this is really, really good, but I'm concerned about the implementation of it because I don't know how quickly you can turn around the level of managers potentially needed, especially when it comes to an international level. You know, this isn't even talking about grassroots clubs. It's not talking about, you know, even at league size, say in the League of Ireland, which would be one of the smaller European leagues. This is going straight to your national team has to do this. You have to be at that quality. So I'm interested to see what you guys think about this, both in terms of the overall concept and also what does make a good modern manager as two footballers.
I don't know. Like, obviously, in theory, it's good. I don't know if we're set up for it. Like, you're talking about what makes a good modern manager in women's football. I think Scarlett mentioned it there, like what Kieran Kilduff did when he came into Athlone. He was a good modern manager in women's football. We lost him to the men's game. He wasn't, and that was maybe always going to happen, but it was a good platform for him to take on senior team. I don't know. I find it obviously really hard because I do want to we want to encourage more female managers. We need it. You know, we need more female coaches. We need them in those positions so that encourages more and more people to get in. If it's like a 10-year plan and it's like educate X amount of people to get them to this level and then you try and implement something maybe. I don't know. I what do you kind of think about at this point? I don't want it to be tokenistic either. And then I'm worried about, say, if you've got men who are in these coaching staff positions and all of a sudden they're being a little bit demoted, do we lose some quality there? Like, are some of these top men managers who want to drive the women's game on, are they then going to drift from, like, is that quality going to drift out of the game? I don't know. I don't want, like, we don't want to take jobs from women, but we don't want to lose the good men either. So how we strike that balance is interesting.
Yeah, I kind of two sort of things that struck to mind when I seen it. I think you're right, Karen. Like in theory, it is a good thing. It's something that I think does need to happen in order to push more females get involved in coaching. But then, what pathways are in place to help women get to that point? Because I think at the minute there's obviously not enough women involved in coaching to begin with. I don't know the exact stats, but there's definitely more men who have higher qualifications and more qualifications in terms of UEFA licensing than women, and that's just down to participation. And you know, I know the FAI implemented that new player to coaching pathway a few years ago, where Anya, Steph, and Rihanna, I think, were the three main users of that, and obviously they're going through that pathway at the minute.
Yes, and yet we lost Steph from the league. So it would be a good thing in one sense to have it, you know, where we get the players or the girls in those positions. But I think you're right, Scarlett. I think if there's needs to be a lot more groundwork done in coach development.
And I think that is a good that's a good sort of initiative from the FAI, but we need more of that in Ireland and worldwide as well. And then I think the second thing is just the loopholes I think that teams will find. Like I know in Ireland we had the sort of thing where if you work within the FAI, you can't be a head coach within the League of Ireland, and we've seen teams come through that loophole as well. So I think there's loopholes for all of these sort of rules, and I think the teams, certain countries might try to find a loophole to sort of avoid this, maybe. And as you said, Karen, it's probably only to keep the quality that they do have if they have a men's coaching staff in that they want, that they're passionate about keeping in.
Yeah, like they could fast track women to a certain level to put them in the position, yet them not actually be the head coach. Is that what you mean? Yeah.
Maybe to put their name down, but they don't have the sort of, not
The
the power,
authority,
but they
really,
don't,
yeah.
the authority that is set on paper, maybe.
Yeah, there's loads of pros to it, obviously, but like Scarlett said, I suppose we just have a level of skepticism based on
So,
obviously the pool of coaching, the pathway for the coaches and then enforcing its implementation correctly. Like, I do think that something probably should be done here. Like, you talk about the player pathway, and that's brilliant that the FAI do it and need to do more of it. But I think if we could bring that more of that into the league, not just directly through the national teams. Like, if you look again at the league, was it one female manager, Scarlett? I think there's probably a few extra in your league, but I'd imagine that it's the predominantly still male head coaches.
I think here there's a lot more female head coaches, but you're right, at home at the minute. But there's Laurie Ryan, is she the only female head coach?
Sorry, there's two then. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, so two is better than the one that we had before, I guess. So, but it's slow. So then maybe we do need the big bang to enforce it. I don't know. It'd just be interesting to see how it'll work out. And is there a model where someone did this internally, where like they're at a low or an international association did this off their own bat, and was there a case study to see how successful it was or how it worked? It would be good to just to have, again, we love the stats. We want more of the meat of it. It's like with the FAI reports. We need a bit more meat. We don't need these fancy numbers. We need the how we get there.
Like
But yeah.
I do kind of agree with you that I think in some ways maybe the Big Bang could be instrumental and helpful. I think it's interesting that it's starting at like under 17s and under 20s levels. I'd be curious as to how many of those countries that are going to compete in those competitions do have the sort of resources to implement this straight away. I think if you listen to like a lot of women that have gone into coaching, particularly here, or have started at a grassroots level and haven't necessarily, gone on to maybe coach at an international side or coach in one of the big couple of leagues across the world, the thing that always strikes me is how difficult it actually is to get on the courses to make sure that you're getting your badges so that you can actually feasibly coach in those competitions or certain leagues. Or, I think we forget sometimes that it's not just having like women who are passionate about coaching and women who are good at coaching at a certain level. Like, you actually do need qualifications. It's a bit like, you need a teaching degree to become a teacher. You do need your coaching badges to a certain level to coach at certain levels. So the barriers to that are obviously the hours that you have to put in, the costs of those in the first place as well. The fact that a lot of women are generally not working full time in football, they're balancing jobs or, families, whatever it is, in a very different way. And like, I always notice it whenever you see the FAI put out the photos congratulating a certain group of people getting their whatever level of badge. You're lucky if there's one or two women in about 20 odd men, and like, fair play to those women that have gone through it and have done it. And I know like the FAI in particular have brought in some things to make sure that there are more women going through those paces, and you have it in the WSL where clubs are helping, players go through their badges. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, if you do them as a player, that you're going to make a great coach. You're going to even want to go into coaching when you retire. So there's just, to me, there's so many holes in this, and I think it's really important that it has started that conversation, and it's really important that I think it shows the benefit of, while she's a controversial character at times, but having someone like Jill Ellis in there in FIFA, who is kind of whispering in the ears of all our favorite men that are at the top of FIFA who shan't be named. But it
Lads.
does show, yeah, the lads, it does show the importance of having, that sort of voice in there, and the fact there was like a whole meeting dedicated to the future of women's coaching. I just feel like there's more nuance, as the two of you have said, that's kind of needed in this conversation. Like, I even saw there was a clip that went viral from over the weekend of a female basketball coach over in the States, like proper giving it to one of her players on the side of the court. And there was all this outrage online about it. And then both the player and the manager came out, and the player was like, "No, like, that's what I need from her. That's what I told her I need, and she knows that." And then the manager was also like, "I was happy to give it to her, but it's just not something that we're used to seeing, I think, especially in the women's game." So I thought the reaction to that was almost as interesting as some of the conversations that we have been having around the football sphere in the last while.
But if a man had shouted at a woman like that, we'd be up in arms, but because a woman did it, I'm like, yeah. So I'm a hypocrite and all that as well. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like, I think it's right that you should, as a player, be open to taking a bit. And I think generationally, I did, and a lot of people who are my age did. I think there's less of it now because something like that is on camera. And then there's a bit more like, that's not right. That's not how you speak to people. Everything's a bit softly, softly now. And I think it's right that a manager should be able to, if you're gone against tactics, if you've gone against what was trained all week, you should be pulled up on it, man, woman, and as players should be able to take it. But again, if a viral clip went in like that, I'd be like, no. So,
It all does depend on context, obviously. Like, there are obviously situations where it's not acceptable to do that, but I was just more, the wider point was, I just thought it
But
was funny that
again,
everyone
what
jumped.
happens on the pitch stays on the pitch. Happens on the pitch stays on the pitch. So there's a reason why that's a saying, and we should be able to park these things and move on. But I guess it's like you say, context, how far you take it, how sensitive you are.
Kathleen, you said about the like modern manager there as well. I think like no two players on any team should be treated the same either. And I think that's something that we don't really see a lot anymore. Like Karen, you spoke about how maybe a few years ago you'd be more likely to get a bollocking off a manager. Like for some players that really works for them. And then for
Yeah,
some,
still.
yeah. And then for other players, they need an arm around the shoulder more often. And I think that's something that maybe is more down to experience than any badges you'll ever get is understanding your players and knowing how to manage each individual rather than treating everybody the same. Because as I said, each player needs their own sort of attention in different ways as well. So I think that's something that won't be taught on a UEFA badged course, but
No.
something that some managers either have or they don't.
Module 3, bollocking.
We'll go in and give a special talk. Here are our thoughts and feelings on it, guys. Kathleen, who has not played football since about like a five-a-side in secondary school. Oh, actually, no, played a bit of five-a-side in college, but
But
that
you probably
doesn't
still
count.
got shouted at then. It's fine.
Okay, we shall move our attention over to England, so, and the WSL. And an interesting weekend in terms of results. And of course, we did have a couple of midweek matches as well, with Chelsea beating Brighton 2-1, and then United dropping points against West Ham in a nil-all draw. Just say we are recording this on Tuesday morning, so it is ahead of the Champions League games, which are happening this week, but we will talk about those a little bit next week, I'm sure, depending on how they go. I don't know if you guys have any preference as to where to start. I mean, Man City banging in goals against Spurs, United managing to pick up some points, Chelsea getting a draw against London City Lionesses, Arsenal banging in the goals as well, and then important win for Villa over Leicester City as well at the bottom of the table. I suppose City is kind of interesting because there was news about Bunny Shaw during the week that she looks likely to extend her contract with Manchester City despite interest from Chelsea. I think that's a really good move for her. I think she'd be
I don't know why she
not
would move now.
stupid
She's
to go to
no.
Chelsea.
She's already a club legend. Man City win this league can actually, if they, I think there's an ambition there where they can now go on and be like, we'll be the ones to make a stamp in Europe next. And if they get backing, and I think they were exposed at the back, I think a little bit of pace, but if they can make one or two marquee signings in the summer, which winning a title will obviously allow you to do, they're such a force to be reckoned with. If you keep Hemp, Shaw, Carolyn all together and firing, and Miedema, sorry, forgot about, just
I was
forgot
about
about
to say.
Miedema. Like, if you can keep them together and firing and develop that those partnerships even further, like, who's stopping that? It's crazy. Like, it's so good. And they're good to watch, to be fair.
Yeah, Scarlett, that is one thing we actually probably haven't really talked. I don't think that much. Like, we've kind of talked maybe in individual games occasionally about the City team, but it is really fun to watch them in a way that we haven't really had with Chelsea as champions in a long time. And I think it is because of all those players that Karen has just mentioned there, and the fact that they all seem to be really enjoying their football. I mean, obviously, there's been a few blips in recent weeks, but by and large, they all seem to be really enjoying their football.
Yeah, and I think that does come down to how good it is to watch as well, a team that's enjoying themselves and obviously has an insane amount of chemistry. I think as well, like, just the way they play, the way Jägerlös has them set up as well, it's just so attacking, like, so direct. The strength they have in the wide areas is terrifying. Like, and when you have Bunny Shaw in the box to be able to win every single ball every single header that comes into the areas is insane. So yeah, I think it's just down to how their confidence at the minute, I'd say, and just how well they're playing together. And as well, it does have you do have to say that they've been lucky in ways with how fit their team have been in the last few weeks. And when you look at Chelsea at the minute, they're losing players a lot at the minute. So that's they've been lucky with that as well this season. But I mean, they're just class to watch. I think by without a shadow of a doubt, they're the best team in probably in the world at the minute to watch in terms of entertainment value. So yeah, I don't think there's no stopping them. And when you talk about Shaw there, I don't know with the service she gets at City, I don't know why you'd want to go anywhere else, because I don't think you'll get that anywhere else in the world.
No, I think it's interesting that Jäger, in so many of his interviews, talks about their mentality now, and it seems like that has certainly there's been a notable shift in that. Like, he wants them to feel like champions, but they're champions, like, to have that winning mentality. Whereas at previous seasons, we saw the heads drop with a result. Whereas now they bounce back and they bang five goals in. You know, like, there seems to be more resilience around it. Obviously, it helps. It's like Scarlett said, that the squad depth that they have is there. But yeah, I suppose when you're scoring 13-minute hat tricks, you're obviously getting the service that you want. And if you're happy and you're winning, there's no need to look anywhere else, realistically.
Yeah, definitely not. I think she seems to be very happy at the club and has been very happy there since she joined, by and large, apart from a few injury breaks here and there. Scarlett, you mentioned there about Chelsea's injury crisis, and to be fair, from the sounds of it, Arsenal not doing too hot ahead of tonight's game either. Sonia Baumpastor had to field questions yesterday in the press conference about why the fact only eight Chelsea players trained ahead of their game tonight. So I'm intrigued to see what the lineups actually are, but you could kind of see a little bit of this in their game at the weekend. Obviously held to a 1-1 draw with London City Lionesses, but she did have to bring on some young players. Chloe Sarri played, she was only 17. Academy, she came through the academy in Chelsea, and then also Lexi Potter, only 19, and then Aggie Beaver-Jones picking up an ankle injury, which led to Nusken playing a bit more attacking, Cuthbert ending the game at right back, and like just lots of different disruption happening for this Chelsea side. And what is I imagine a season that they are looking forward to seeing the end of, well, depending on how the Champions League goes for them, I suppose.
Yeah, I think you could really see late on in the game that they were struggling, and Players might be on maybe limited minutes as well. So it's not ideal. And then you mentioned the Academy girls there. Like Alexia Potter scored midweek against Brighton, which is great for her. But then also like you've a few players and like when you're playing young players, it is great to give them that opportunity, but to throw them in against a team like London City, who have been, probably the standout team of, I suppose, the lower standard. We always knew they'd come in and perform just because the backing they have. But just the obviously they've picked up a lot of great results this season. So it's a big game to throw them into, especially when Chelsea are kind of dying for a bit of momentum. But as you mentioned, the Champions League, they're probably looking to rotate in that game, and with the midweek game against Brighton as well, they've had a lot of games recently. So they're probably just looking to keep some of the legs a bit fresh. But yeah, it'd be disappointing for them. You had Buchanan as well, who was playing, I think started her first game since her ACL injury too. So like I don't know, you wouldn't want to be in that camp at the minute. And I know Van Basten was joking about playing in like a World Sevens tournament or something in the Champions League tonight. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see who does play for them tonight and how that does go. I think you mentioned
Look,
Arsenal there, so
I
yeah,
think you
you'd
do
be
actually win more money if you play in the World Sevens than if you play in the
yeah,
Champions
probably.
League.
So you might be right. Then they can maybe buy Bunny Shaw. I think though as well, there's no harm in giving these players a little bit of experience because like we've discussed it last week, I think the changing of the guard is coming. And yes, Chelsea have the resources to buy, but if they can promote some people through, and if these girls as teenagers are good enough to play for Chelsea now, then they're obviously serious talents, and what they need is experience. And while Chelsea need to get Champions League, they can kind of write off being title challengers. So I don't know. I think you're right. I think it's just balancing everything now. The
I don't
Champions
think
League could
that.
still happen. You would be surprised based on recent support performances if they can get over Arsenal, who seem to be hitting their stride. But you never know what Chelsea. Well, you
I'm
do. They'll
cursing you
probably
later
win.
on this evening,
Yeah.
Karen.
They'll probably win.
Champions League isn't wrapped up for them though. I'd definitely be concerned about that for next season. Because they'll struggle to bring players. Obviously, they're going to lose so many players in this window. So I think to not have Champions League next year would obviously be. It'll be a bad factor for them trying to recruit.
Yeah, actually, Karen, I wanted to ask you about this, and we'll go on to United just after. But I saw during the week that there was some rumors about Millie Bright wanting to finish her career up north, and that United was her preference when her contract is up during the summer. I
She
can already
said on
tell
her
by your
podcast,
face.
she said on her podcast that she hates playing United the most. And also,
Well,
no.
hating playing them is different than playing for them, though.
Or no, hate like wanted to beat them the most, like hated lo like
Okay.
losing to
She
them
planned
the
to
most.
get.
But I don't know if that's really what United need, really now. I suppose experience, like it's worked with bringing someone like Janssen in, but like you don't want to bring too much of it in at the detriment of development players because you still think United are a developing team. They've made some very good signings this year, but those signings are, in their 20s and are very good long-term prospects, very clever signings, I would say. Schuller is obviously a little bit older, but I don't know. I think that would be. That's a rumor. That's a rumor. She's gone to the
It,
NWSL,
to be fair,
realistically.
it was a rumor I saw. It came from a reputable outlet, but at the same time, I didn't see it picked up in the same way these things normally do get picked up whenever, there is a bit of truth to them.
Maybe
So
that's her preference, but if that would be
I
on
think that very much was a claim, was
United.
that she preferred to finish like closer to home, and if she was to choose somewhere, it'd be
That's
United.
fair enough. I kind of respect that, if you want to, like she's had such a good career, like she probably does want to finish playing WSL, and if it's closer to home, yeah, I totally understand her want for that. Whether United is a fit, I just don't know. I don't know at this point. Like, who's losing out there? Millie Turner, Janssen. It's not the pathway. It's,
Yeah. It depends, I suppose, on the sort of minutes that they would plan on having her for though as well, or is it just a case
Yeah,
of
if it
bringing in
was,
someone
if it
who's
was,
won Champions League,
if
or
she's
well,
willing
not won
to
Champions League, but
be, if it's willing, if she's willing to be part of squad depth and allow for rotation, that would be an amazing signing. But how do you go from being Chelsea captain and winning all of that stuff to potentially sitting on the bench for Man United? I think it would be tough for her to do that. She could go and start for Liverpool. If it's up north or
Yeah.
whatever, like that would be an option.
We shall see how it all
Just
pans out.
Sam Kerr didn't
Speaking
say she wanted to go
of no, funny enough,
No.
didn't see that one. Maybe we
Fair.
can start the rumor here, like
Get
that time we
the
did whenever Emma Byrne suggested someone should go
rumor.
to a certain club, and all of a sudden all these outlets were like, Arsenal legend drops hint about players' next
Oh, she
step.
was right. It was about Russo going, so like she was right.
Okay, well, look at Manchester United then. Our old pal Melvin Mallard hopping up in the 94th minute to secure the win for them in late drama. I mean, obviously we're very pro Everton on this podcast, but we're also pro United for the sake of Cairn.
Yeah.
But so a great win for them, especially considering the fact they did have that draw earlier in the
It's
week. And
just so
just to,
disappointing that they had that draw.
yeah, it was so
Like,
unnecessary.
because
Like,
now, yeah, it's just, it's, you're looking at Arsenal and how Arsenal are playing, and you're just like, damn it. Yeah, like,
but
Arsenal.
are Chelsea the ones that they should really be like looking at a little bit more potentially?
Yeah, the scrap now for that place is United Chelsea.
Yeah.
I think Arsenal are taking second spot here, hitting their stride at just the perfect time. Obviously, it's not a title challenge, but going into the Champions League, definitely securing that Champions League spot for next season. I think that would be Arsenal's to lose, and then yeah, like just having that little bit of breathing space, if they could have got overcome West Ham during the week, would have been so important. But obviously, to bounce back as well, it brings the buzz around because they have been a bit up and down. To do it in the 94th minute, like it's you're buzzing going into training for the rest of the week after that. They were the better team, but again, just not as, I guess, clinical as they could have been. But we saw a good few kind of corners from those front post runs. Anna Patton got one as well. Like set pieces were really prolific this weekend. And yeah, Mallard
They
did well,
caught
snuck
the
in
Premier
between.
League bug.
Oh no. Don't let it go like that. You know.
Yeah. No, it is interesting as well. You said that about the them being buzzing going into training after a match like that, because that was something that Mark Skinner talked about after the game, and saying like it's an epic win because we've lost the cup final, which is devastating. Everyone feels that. We then go away to West Ham midweek, don't quite get over the line, get back at 4 o'clock on Thursday morning, get up, come in to do an hour's training session because that's all we can do with the squad size that we have. So once he's a great man for sprinkling in a few little
Yeah.
like complaints whenever things don't quite go his
Get me
way.
more players.
Which Scarlett, to be fair, it isn't a big squad. And they have bought relatively well this year, but they could definitely do with a few more if they are going to keep up with the Champions League title race included as well next season.
Yeah, and you look at the bench they had as well, like they brought on a 16-year-old as well in the late minutes of the game. So yeah, I think that's another thing, like Champions League qualification is going to be really important for them to be able to attract players such as Millie Bright, I suppose, for next season, and many more, because they do
These
need
young
some
up and comers.
young up and comers. Yeah, the next big things. So yeah, no, but I think United will do it. I think they will sort of maintain what they need to do. I haven't actually seen the fixtures, but it's mad. There's only a 4 game left, I think, for teams that have played the fixtures that they should have at this stage. But I mean, yeah, this game they got through it. I was looking. Everton have conceded 8 of their 29 goals this season in 80 minutes plus. So that's something that they're going to have to look at, I suppose, next season. Is keeping on to keeping hold of, I suppose, either leads or draws late on in games, because like the amount of points that would have lost them throughout the season. I know they've hit a good bit of form in the few weeks before the break, but it must be a fatigue issue or a transition issue or something like that. But you can't be shipping late goals, 8 late goals, I suppose, throughout the season. That's about 30% of the goals conceded. So they'll be disappointed with that, no doubt. But yeah, I mean, I think United will do what they have to do to get Europe, and they do need it for that strength in depth to attract for next year.
They're going to have a very interesting big game. Also, apologies if anyone can hear the drilling going on in the background. I think the house next door is getting work done, and all I can hear is intense drilling. They have the big one, which is a Manchester Derby up next. So that's, in
Oh.
terms of obviously, I think City need 8 points to kind of like confirm the title. But for United, that'll be a really big one mentality wise in terms of that Champions League fight. So I'll be all very interested to see how that goes. 12:30 on Saturday, Karen. I'm
I
sure
don't
you'll be
know.
up watching.
I certainly won't be. I'd be very surprised if they get a result there.
It will.
But never say never.
Never say never, indeed. Okay, and someone mentioned Aston Villa there, and I think we should definitely take a look at it because Anna Batman Passion, as I saw her being called over the weekend, got a goal there, an important win for Aston Villa, but another disaster for Leicester, just in terms of keeping them very much rooted to the bottom of that table. But it was nice to see Anna get a goal because it has been a tough enough season for her and the team in general. And of course, Chrissy Hansen just seems to keep, despite the fact she keeps firing the goals in and is one of the league's top
Yeah.
scorers, is in one of the worst teams in the league.
She's class. That left foot is a wand.
She has been, I think, is she second to Bonnie Shaw? Bonnie Shaw is like a good bit above her, but I think she's like really high up there in the goal scoring charts, and Bonnie Shaw is just like astronomically ahead of everyone else. But not an ideal result for them. And then we have, of course, the Arsenal game. Nice little 5-0 win. Great to see Chloe Kelly, after all the injuries that she's had this season, and also just keeps them taking over. Arsenal are kind of interesting at the moment, because obviously quarterfinal against Chelsea, today, Tuesday. And then they also have 2 games in hand in the league, so it's almost kind of hard to tell where they are because of that.
Think they're in good stead. I think they're in really, really good stead. Cal Dente looked back to herself. They were able to rest little, rest McCabe, which means, that they'll be fresh enough. They're able to make subs. I think they're gunning for retaining that Champions League. And in terms of confidence and how both teams are on paper, you'd be back in Arsenal there. And yeah, I'd be backing them. Obviously, to take that second spot, I've said that. Kelly, like Smith's attempt where she kind of like dispossessed a player and hit a volley and it hit the crossbar, that could have been goal of the season. And then Kelly shortly follows that up with an absolute pinger from her left foot from outside the box. I don't think we've like acknowledged that. Like, that's her weaker foot. And
Yeah, I
it, even
know.
though sometimes you swing a left boot at it, and it's literally swinging a left boot, and you might catch it. Her technique looks so natural. I was like, "What? No."
Feel like she makes everything she does look so easy, like even throughout like the Euros and everything, like even the penalties, it just looks it's such a hard thing to do, is that technique, and as you mentioned, Gareth, the volley, and it's just she makes it look like a piece of piss, you know?
I wouldn't be surprised if she just rocked up and took a penalty with her left foot now next time. Like, she's that level of confidence as well that you're just like, right,
Yeah.
well, that's her, whatever.
Just
Let's
makes
mix
borderline
up.
arrogance,
Yeah,
like,
it's borderline arrogance and we hate it because we're not used to it. But at the same time, you have to respect it when you can pull something like that
100%.
out of the bag. Have at it, girl.
If she wants to keep doing it for the rest of the season, that I have no issues with that, as long as we don't end up playing England at any stage with any of our international competitions. Scarlett, the final game then to look at is that Liverpool game where their away form let them down once again. Now, it potentially doesn't matter as much as it did because of the way that the season is going for them. They've seemed to have kind of clambered a little bit out of the hole that they were in, but still probably one that'll annoy them, especially against a Brighton team that has been struggling a bit as of late.
Yeah, I think kind of seemed like neither team wanted to really win the game at times. The last few minutes was the obviously the most happened in the last few minutes. The two keepers making good saves to keep their teams in it. But a very nothing game. I nearly think both teams would be okay with the result. Like Brighton have kind of just, I think they're just gonna sort of ride their way to the end of the season. Just sort of go through the motions a little bit, and then Liverpool would be happy enough. The results they got after Christmas mean they're safe. Essentially, I can't see 5 points. I can't see Leicester safe picking up 5 points from the last four games. So I think they'll be all right. But yeah, a really kind of nothing game. Mia Enderby probably had the best chance of the game. Had one-on-one and kind of skied it. So I think both teams would be disappointed with it, but at the same time, I don't think either team really deserved 3 points. So,
Yeah, it's a fair assessment, I think. Yeah.
yeah, it's kind of why I left that game till last,
Yeah.
because I was like, I don't
Yeah.
know if there's a whole lot that we could really say about this
No.
one on today's
No.
podcast. And with that, that is the end. Thank you very much, guys, as always. Very enjoyable conversation. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. As I said at the start of the podcast, we know all eyes will be on the boys in green for the rest of this week. We are keeping our fingers crossed and everything else crossed that it is good news that we were coming away from Thursday with. But one way or the other, we will be back next week to look at all the WSL fixtures and any other big news that does come out of the world of women's football in the next week or so. Karen's taking a little bit of a break for a while, so everyone can say goodbye to Karen for a bit, but she'll be back in a couple of weeks, and myself and Scarlett and hopefully some special guests will be steering the ship during that time. But for now, thank you all very much for listening, and we will see you all again very, very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Paint March Green with Cadbury.